To show you.
Yeah, I pushed mine a little further back also. I changed position, so
I'd like to push you further back a little bit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'll change position on you right now, bitch.
Oh my god.
Oh, this is good.
On that very subtle entendre, shall we get started?
Let's do it.
Look at you. All right, let's do it.
Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
In a very different position than normal, but still good.
And Phil Acevedo.
In my favorite position, in between mom and dad, which is you two.
Oh, okay. Oh, so where's he going with this?
Whoa.
What?
I'm going to start calling you guys my mom and dad from now on.
Oh, please don't.
You're going to be like, oh, it's okay. It's okay, mijo. You're okay. The homeless man can't hurt you anymore.
Oh, man. Don't get me started. I'm about to run out there and check on my car again.
No, dude. You have our permission.
Again, maybe he's in the back seat.
Thanks to you, Webster. I'm going to start looking in the back of my seat now every time I get in my car.
Oh. Welcome to the life of every single woman.
Or me, who had just watched Child's Play 2 too early.
Oh, I know what scene you're talking about from Child's Play.
Yeah, that gets me every time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now,
but this is not Child's Play.
No.
What is this, Webster?
Nope. No.
It does have Brad Dourif.
It does have Brad Dourif in it. Just for a brief moment, but man, is it a glorious moment. We are talking about Urban Legend from 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And kicking us off, I am going to hand this over to Phil to introduce this bitch today.
All right. Shall we start with an IMDb synopsis?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. A college student suspects a series of bizarre deaths are connected to certain urban motherfucking legends.
Oh, shit.
That is so succinct. It is laughable.
They somehow stretch it to an hour and 40 minutes. You know, they just somehow stretch that to an hour and 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Urban Legend is directed by Jamie Blanks and written by Silvio Horta and produced by Gina Matthews. And it stars from yesterday, Mr. Jared Leto, 30 Seconds to Motherfucking Mars.
Come break me down.
Bury me. Oh, got it.
I'm finished with both of you.
I wanted to break. Hey, Fwen, what if I wanted to break? Laugh it all up in your face? Oh, what would you do?
I can't, we're not doing this.
All right, it's not just Jared Leto, but it also stars Alicia Witt, Rebecca Gayhart, Joshua Jackson, Loretta Devine? Yeah. Tara Reid, coming straight from freaking Sharknado, Tara Reid.
God damn it, it's in the script! It's in the fucking script!
Oh, wow! Damn, I'm good. Holy shit.
Season of Tara Reid, for sure.
Michael Rosenbaum and Robert... 1, 2, 3, 4, Freddy's coming for you, and I totally butchered the thing. Robert England.
You did. It's okay. We got it, Phil. We got it.
We know who he is.
And then Brad Dourif. We got Freddy and Chucky in this.
Yes, Brad Dourif.
It is an uncredited cameo, which I think is funny. They were just like, no. People aren't going to know who you are.
I saw recently, speaking of Brad Dourif, when I watched Urban Legend recently, I also threw on Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking wish I have not seen the sci-fi Chucky series, but I want to explore more of Charles Lee Ray, the character, before
then
he turns into Chucky.
Then watch the series.
Show.
Okay, okay, I figured. I was hoping that would be the case.
No, Webster,
okay.
you saw the whole first season, right?
Yeah, I did.
It's okay, such a good fucking show, dude. Cool. Like, it's so good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I binged, like, the first half, and then I binged the second half with Danny, and it's so fucking good.
Yeah, nice. It's probably some of the best Chucky content literally since 1 and 2.
Nice. That's what I've been hoping for.
I wouldn't go far, because I have a huge soft spot for Bride of Chucky.
So. You know, you're right. That's what I'm like. It's kind of up there with Bride, actually. Yeah, I would say they're
Bride of Chucky's awesome.
Comparable. So. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same era as this shit, too, so it's great.
It ties in everything. Like, it ties up, like, literally everything. It's incredible.
I'm pretty sure it's in the script, but this movie came out the same year as Bride of Chucky, I believe.
Yep.
Actually, it is not in the script.
Oh, wow. All right, because I know they're both from 98. All right, anyways, let's continue with the urban legend here. But anyways, long story short, I need to watch Chucky now that I know that it explores more of Charles Lee Ray, which is awesome.
Oh, big time, big time.
Cool, that's what I need. Anyways, urban legend box office info, and just overall more info to begin with. The release date was September 25th, 1998. Webster, were you born yet or no?
Yes.
Okay, for sure. I forget how old you were sometimes.
Hey.
I don't know. I'm bad at math. I'm terrible at math.
Hey now.
You're
this
a rock
is what
star.
Dreams are made of.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Oh, God. Let's continue, shall we? Budget info. 14 million smackaroos. And the box office, this movie made $72.5 million back.
Which is crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. That's good.
It's insane it cost that much money to make. That seems kind of expensive for this movie in like one set.
This is a stacked fucking cast, though.
That's a good point. That's some. Mm-hmm. These are some 90s all stars for sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Joshua Jackson, like literally at the peak of his career during fucking Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's Creek.
When they fucking play, I don't want to win.
That is also coming up.
Okay, good, good.
Because I was hoping to get some Dawson's Creek.
That was fantastic. That was such a good. Oh, even as a kid, man. I was like, oh my God, these meta motherfuckers.
I know, it's so fucking funny. But of
Webster,
course,
take us into this. What do you got for us here, Webster?
Yeah. So of course we've heard this story before. We would be remiss talking about urban legend without talking about urban legends.
Yeah, that's a good point. We should understand the meta here.
I guess. Well, also, like, I am a sucker for urban legends. I don't know how you guys feel about
urban legends. Oh, love them. Love them.
But I have a huge soft spot for them. But from Bunnyman Bridge to Bloody Mary, urban legends have been entertaining children for decades. It might seem hard to define, but urban legends really aren't that hard to pin down. They all have a few of the same traits that, once identified, it's really easy to pick them out. An urban legend, or a contemporary legend, modern legend, urban myth, or urban tale, there's a lot of different names for them, is a genre of folklore consisting of fake claims or stories circulated as true, especially as having happened to, quote, a friend of a friend, or a distant family member, often with either horrifying, humorous, or cautionary elements.
Also known as the Proto-Shyamalan.
Proto-Shyamalan. Goddamn. These legends can be entertaining, but often contain mysterious peril or troubling events such as disappearances and strange objects or entities. Urban legends may confirm moral standards, reflect prejudices, or be a way to make sense of societal anxieties. Yes, I somehow made it academic.
Well, that's good. Because moral standards, prejudices, and social anxieties, thank God there's not too many that come from the 60s, right? Because that would be
horrifying. At the core of it, that's what horror is, right? It's a reflection of the societal anxieties at the time for a lot of it. So so I think that urban legends are also, I would say, they're two sides of the same coin in that respect, I think.
They're horror before you can put it on celluloid. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's like poor man's horror because it's all it's all told verbally. It's told from person to person. Like,
it's telephone horror.
Yeah.
Telephone game horror right there. There
it's
we go.
Telephone game horror.
Bro, how do you think us Mexicans got La Llorona or the Chupacabras? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all
the Cuy, all those motherfuckers.
Yeah.
All folklore.
It's all folklore. Well, also, yep. Yeah, folklore and urban legends, like, also very similar in, like, the... It's all told orally from one person to another, and it's just... I love how we communicate stories to each other and how things grow and turn into, like, this whole thing, because everyone knows or heard the story of someone who died playing Bloody Mary. Yeah. It's never fucking happened. But we all know someone who knows someone. And, like, how did we get there? Like, it's just like the S phenomenon. Like, how did we all know how to draw those S's?
It's like, it's a culturally refined version of, like, oh, the best elements that somebody made up in the telephone game, that's sticking. We love that. We love that detail. Yep. Yeah, so that's part of the story now. Just going to say that's
all. Yep. Exactly. So, moving right along, the narrator of an urban legend may claim it happened to a friend or to a friend of a friend, like I said, which personalizes the tale and makes it feel more real, as well as enhance the power of the narrative, all the while distancing the teller from the tall tale. This is very important. Many urban legends depict horrific crimes, contaminated foods, or other situations that could potentially affect many people, making it feel like it could happen literally anywhere. This is also an important thing to keep in mind, because how are these supposed to travel if it's specific to a certain locale?
That's true. Very universal stories.
Right. Anyone believing such stories might feel compelled to warn other loved ones, which is how we get from one thing to another to, like, and the next thing you know. On occasion, news organizations, school officials, or even police departments have issued warnings concerning the latest threat. Example. According to the Lights Out urban legend and subject of our movie, street gang members would drive around without headlights until a compassionate motorist responded with the traditional flashing of the headlights, whereupon a prospective new gang member would have to murder the citizen as a requirement of initiation. Y'all remember this one?
Yeah. This definitely seems like a 90s Super Predator Clinton era urban legend going on. Yeah. Right here.
Well, it's funny because, like, I know some people who are still worried about this today, even though it's a well debunked urban legend.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
A fax retelling this legend was received at the Nassau County, Florida Fire Department, and it was forwarded to the police. And from there, all city departments, where the Minister of Defense for Canada was taken, like, they took it also, and he forwarded it as an urgent security warning to all Ontario members of Parliament. Mm. So they took it as such a serious thing, even though it, like, had no bearing whatsoever in reality.
We're just worried about our citizens.
Well, what you're going to do here is you're not going to flash your lights... you're not going to flash your lights when you see another motorist coming at you.
That's a good one. That's a good Canadian impression.
That was completely off the cuff. I had no idea if that was going to work or not.
Oh, that's pretty good. That was good.
Thank Mountie you. Webster here. There you go.
Thank you.
Look at you.
Persistent urban legends do often maintain a degree of plausibility, like we see in the story of a serial killer deliberately hiding in the backseat of a car, thus urging women to always be sure to check the back seat.
Also for Chucky.
Also for Chucky.
Michael Myers.
Okay. Michael Myers too, yeah. Specifically, like, I still check the back seat. Like, I am so terrified that one day I'm gonna look and there's gonna be, like, which, first of all, my car, like, it would have to be like a very little person just hiding in the back seat of my car.
Yeah.
It's in the back of the Challenger. Yeah,
I drive an SUV, so I have two back seats. Ooh. Like, yeah, so I have
thank you.
Yeah,
I would literally take one of those huge fucking flashlights that you could beat someone to death with and, like, go like hello.
That's why I also instinctively check every single one of my chicken nuggets to make sure not one of them's a finger.
Oh, yeah. Or the chili, Wendy's chili.
Also my Wendy's chili. Be like, no fingers today. I'm good.
Because
beans and cheese, please.
Right, because I know you're a frequent consumer of Wendy's chili. But anyway.
It's a diuretic, please, Webster.
Y'all aren't here to listen to me talk about urban legends all day long, are you? Nah, we have a movie to talk about.
Okay, fine. That's fun. That's pretty fun, though. I like that.
I like that a lot, actually. And to piggyback a little bit off that, aren't you glad you didn't turn on the lights?
That urban legend will haunt me forever.
Well, the concept for the film was developed by Silvio Horta, a recent film school graduate from New York University who was working at the perfume counter in a Nordstrom.
God. Yeah, humble beginnings.
Very humble beginnings.
Also, when you have nothing else better to do all day except just sit there and dream up fucking screenplays because you're at a perfume counter in a Nordstrom.
It's like, what innocuous way could these asshole customers be just picked off? But how could I do it? How could I do it?
I like that. I like that. That's that. You know, having a regular 9-to-5 like that, you know, my respect to a regular 9. I am also myself a regular 9-to-5er, but a 9-to-5 can really give you the opportunity to think up some weird shit for a movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Especially retail. The amount of horrendous fantasies you have at that point.
Especially retail. Especially retail. Anyways, so Horta pitched the idea in late 1997 to Gina Matthews, a producer who was leading writer's workshop at the time. Matthews liked the story, and the two began further developing the concept before Horta drafted a screenplay. And there, producer Neil H. Moritz subsequently became involved and agreed to co-produce with Matthews and Michael McDonald.
Mitch McConnell or what?
Mitch McConnell. I literally thought that said Mitch McConnell for a second, and I was like, wait a minute.
Little known fact, Mitch McConnell, film producer.
I really do like the stories of this Urban Legends. I want to make this movie about urban legends, Mr. President.
Please don't hire any black people for this. Just make sure it's an all-white cast.
Oh my god!
I'm willing to put a sizable budget behind it.
Yes.
God damn.
Fiscally speaking, here, Mr. Producer.
Joshua Jackson's hair is too dark. Can we blonde it up a little bit?
All right, that's enough Mitch McConnell impressions for one podcast.
Forever.
Yeah.
Although we will absolutely be making fun of Mitch McConnell at some point again in the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm down. Like, I'm totally down. Anyways, Horta and Matthews pitched the screenplay to numerous film producers, but none expressed interest in funding the project. However... Ooh. In a last-ditch effort at getting the film made, Horta brought the screenplay to Phoenix Pictures, a then-new company who had only produced a small number of films. An executive at Phoenix was impressed by the concept, but Horta recalled that his screenplay, quote, needed to be better, end quote, and rewrites began to take place in the late fall of 1997, and that's the end of the sentence.
Yeah. No period. No period, Phil. Just, you're fine.
Yes.
He Use reads punctuation, too.
Use your imagination. It's not a typo, but it is a grammar mistake.
It's all good. I was going to continue with the next sentence, which reads, Jared Leto was from yesterday. Anyways, Jared Leto was cast based on a, quote, dark quality he possessed.
God.
That's funny. That was at odds with his conventional appeal.
God.
And because he was already an established actor, known for his role on the teen drama series My So-Called Life. Did anybody watch that?
No.
No. But was this pre-cult or post-cult? Or is this like the cult
this
was
is
like...
way pre-cult, because the cult is only like something that happened in like 2020.
Oh, was it that recent?
Yeah.
Wait, you're talking about cult Jared Leto? Yeah, that's like a new thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, he recently did acid. Now he thinks he's Jesus or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Some shit like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, this is way before. This is like humble beginnings, Jared Leto. Like in the late 90s, he did this. He worked with David Fincher on Fight Club. Mm-hmm. And about a year after that, I think in 2000, he worked with Darren Aronofsky
for Requiem for a Dream.
Requiem for a Motherfucking Dream.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right. So,
and then this in between somehow. Okay.
And then also in 2000, American Psycho.
American Psycho. Yeah. Hey, Paul!
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it.
So good.
So, shall we continue?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Producers found their protagonist, Natalie, in Alicia Witt, citing her as a strong actor who wanted to play something against type. After being in David Lynch's Dune and Twin Peaks. Oh, very cool, very cool.
Okay.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, the queen herself, accepted the role of Sasha, who had to back out due to schedule conflicts with Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
God damn it.
I know. Can you imagine? Tara Reid was cast instead. And Tara Reid might sound familiar. She was also in Sharknado from Trash.
She's definitely a silver medal Sarah Michelle Gellar for sure.
Oh, yeah. That
is, yeah.
Dollar General Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. I actually, like, in, I don't know, I guess when I was, like, a teenager and, I don't know, weird things was going on with my body at the time. Tara Reid was one of those actresses, like, from American Pie and stuff.
American Pie, knew it,
I was like, Tara Reid, who are you?
Cool.
Yeah.
She, something about Tara Reid back in the day was like, can you like, be my wife? Could I wife you? Yeah, she was wifey material back in the day for sure.
Yeah, she has like a look about her. Where she, I mean, she's very pretty, so I get
she
it.
Is. She is.
In this movie in particular, I'm like, God damn, wear that red dress. Wear that red dress.
Yeah. Absolutely.
The hair and makeup department did her fucking dirty. She has these stupid ass little pigtails.
I guess. Okay.
Well, in the movie, it's messy. They, like, they're cute, but, like, it's very late 90s, first of all. So maybe I'm being a little overly critical because I definitely did that hairstyle at one point. Two, it's just very messy. Like, the hair and makeup department did her dirty. Like, they could have made it look better.
That may have got me going back in the day, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think 12...
been an appeal.
I don't think 10, 11-year-old me would complain.
No.
Of course you guys wouldn't complain. But 28-year-old me is, of course, like, look, like, I don't know. It just, I noticed.
You're focused on it.
I noticed.
You know, I recently watched this movie, and 35-year-old Phil is still not complaining. Still kind of, still looks kind of good.
Good for you.
Anyways.
Fucking horn dog.
Anyways. Rebecca Gayheart was cast as Brenda after fighting for the part after multiple actresses expressed interest in the role.
Imagine wanting to be this insane person that quick, that bad.
But you know what, dude?
She got them crazy eyes.
I can't see anybody else playing in this role.
No. Yeah.
Same here. No. Especially with, like, the very last frame. I'm like, she's got that psycho face right there for sure.
That's the kind of girl that, like, I don't even want to come anywhere near. Like, I'm like, hey, you're cute. Come anywhere you're very near. Pretty. But, oh, wow. You sick bastard.
She's like, got you for life, bitch. 18 years. 18 years. You got one.
Oh, my God.
God damn.
Jesus. Anyways. Meanwhile, our boy Robert Englund accepted the role of Professor Wexler after being impressed by the concept of the screenplay, and was also a fan of several of the other cast members.
Oh, he was a fan of them? That's nice.
That's nice. No, the dude rules. And finally, speaking of horror royalty, Brad... give me a middle name for Brad Dourif.
Brad
Tiffany, where the fuck are you? Oh, okay. All right, that too. Brad
What did you say, Anthony? Oh.
What was that nickname you came up with?
Warm Tongue.
Warm Tongue, there you go.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was going to say, Brad Tiffany, where the fuck are you, Dourif?
I like that. I know they're both very good.
But anyways, Brad Dourif was given an uncredited cameo appearance as the gas station attendant in the beginning of the film, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Great stuttering.
That was the most over-dramatic, like, there's someone in here, can you go? Like, what the fuck, Brad?
It's pretty accurate.
it's literally him and one of the rebels from Pan's Labyrinth with the top two cinematic stutterers right there.
Oh,
top two.
Funny. Oh, you talk about the stutter who got the glass bottle to the face? Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Brutal scene. Very
great
brutal
stuttering,
scene.
But great stuttering.
Anyways, overall production was smooth, and a rough cut was pre-screened for a test audience in Pasadena during post-production. And, of course, the audience response was overall positive. Mm. The team felt they were on the right track, and with that... Urban Legend was ready for theaters.
How did we get here? How did we get here?
I mean, I was ready to just like be like, oh, this movie probably flopped, but it's actually a whole different story. So let's check it out.
Is it though? Like, I don't know. We're about to.
Yeah.
It's just like that Urban Legend in box office history. So. Urban Legend premiered in Westwood Village, Los Angeles, before being released theatrically on September 25th. 1998, and Westwood Village is known for having some fantastic premieres there, actually. So nice.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. We gotta get them college kids. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 24%.
Yeah,
based on 62 reviews.
Now. Hold on.
Wow. Okay, and that's the critical one, right? That's not the audience right there?
Yeah, that is the critic one, I believe.
Damn. With, of course, an average
rating of
4.40 out of 10, which is actually probably one of the way lower ones we've had on this podcast. Holy shit.
It's a 24% on Rotten Tomatoes still. I saw one that was a 10% somewhere.
Oh, lordy. Mm. Well, the site's critic consensus reads, elements of Scream reappear in a vastly inferior vehicle.
Isn't God that rough?
Damn.
Jeez.
Tough crowd. God.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is the Hyundai Sonata of Scream.
That's good.
Scream knockoffs. You're like, holy shit.
This is the Datsun of you.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
This is the 2012 Ford Focus of all these.
Wow.
All right, we'll go a little low. That was a little low. Anyways, Anita Gates of the New York Times called the film a, quote, teenage moviegoer's dream. This almost ready to Katy Perry it right there. Almost ready.
Teenage moviegoer's
dream.
Oh, wow. The way you turned me on. Oh, wait.
It has familiar
in my skin tight jeans like a teenager.
You gotta urban legend it. You gotta urban legend it a little bit somehow. You know, you gotta just almost there.
Give me a little Dawson's Creek and a urban geek. I don't know.
We're gonna I can't do it either. It's too hard. Too hard.
It is.
But, quote, it has familiar young television stars. Familiar older stars with cult followings, Robert Englund as the aforementioned professor, John Neville as the dean, an edgy sense of humor, a tricky plot, and characters too genre savvy for their own good. Maybe there will be an oversaturation of Scream-inspired horror films someday soon, but this one feels fresh, end quote. A little off the mark, New York Times, was fine. In 1998, there definitely was an oversaturation as the end of 1998, but you know what? I'm a little on board. Anyways, Robert Heisler of the Los Angeles Times called it an unoriginal, quote, low-voltage drive-in movie made strictly by the book.
No Damn. Imagination.
Damn, what an asshole. Anyways, Robert.
Wow.
I messed up my boy's name. I saw Bob there, and I fucked up. I feel so bad. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times, who has been here since literally episode one, awarded the film 2 out of 4 stars, but praised Christopher Young's musical score, which is actually a great score, and adding, quote, the film is competently made and the attractive cast emotes and screams energetically and does a good job of unwisely grabbing one another by the shoulders. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Honest review, very, very accurate, I would say, for sure. Yeah.
I think 2 out of 4 stars from Roger Ebert, of all people, is fair.
Fair?
It's,
yeah.
It's more than
somewhat of an endorsement. Somewhat.
It was more than I was expecting, I'm going to be honest with you.
Definitely, definitely. But yeah, also,
same.
Yeah, shades of Tim Burton, Danny Elfman in the score, actually. I was really surprised.
It's so funny you say that, because I was thinking that when I was watching it. Yeah.
I'm, like, surprised by how good that was, yeah. But also, well, you know, now that we know all what these stuffy critics think, let's go to the film Twitter Lite, but somehow everyone's favorite place. Letterboxd, baby, let's fucking do it! Yeah, well, urban legend has an average of 2.4 out of 5 star rating with 44,000 reviews? What the fuck?
It's an Alex Webster special.
How was it always an Alex Webster special?
It's
an
Alex Webster special.
An insane amount of reviews with an weirdly lower score than you would think.
Yeah.
I have trashy taste. It's very an trashy. Alex Webster special.
Very trashy and wonderful, I would say. So,
yeah.
User Ali with 5 stars. Quote, 90s slasher films are always so campy and fun and so underrated. Write that on my tombstone because I will never change my mind.
Underrated? Whenever that review was written, I'm assuming it was written like 5 years ago.
I don't know.
User Alley.
Hold on. I can.
Because 90s slasher films underrated.
They definitely. I mean, I think critically are underrated, but like by fans are definitely.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely say it's a cult thing because again, this movie has a 2.4.
Yeah, it's a good point. Mm-hmm. It's a good point. Mm-hmm. But of course, Holly with 3 stars. In all caps, I lost my fucking mind when I Don't Want to Wait started playing.
Oh, that's so good. That's good. That's good.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Sam Thompson starts his 2-star review off. Quote, Urban Legend is a by-the-numbers teen slasher flick that is dumb with a capital D. Okay, that was pretty good. All right, you know what?
That's fair.
That's fair. That's a good... It's fair with a capital F for sure. Holy shit. Okay. And finally, we have Audrey. Yeah, Audrey with 3 stars. Quote, this is true. It happened at my school a few years back.
Oh, what the fuck? Wow.
That was a good one to top the Letterboxd. I like that. Okay.
That's good.
Thank you.
Nice Letterboxd reviews, but of course, I mean, pretty simple movie, but also a simple plot. How about, you know, maybe we revisit this plot.
Break it down?
Should we?
Break it down now.
Should we break it down? It's time for the fucking play-by-play.
Yeah, so let's do a fun little plot breakdown here. I have it broken down. I gave myself like 3 bullet points for some reason. I guess I don't feel like talking.
Okay.
But you guys are going to be talking way more than me, so you guys will just be getting my fun commentary.
Well, Webster, you know the thing about plot breakdowns. I'm a fan of plots, and I'm a fan of breaking down. So let's go ahead and do it.
Are you okay?
Can
you
talk to someone? And I am a masochist, ma'am.
I'm just joking. Hell yeah. It's been a day.
Oh. Phil almost had to fight someone. It's been a lot.
Phil could have been on one of the, what do you call back in the day videos? World Star. He could have been on World Star video. God. Sure. Almost happened. But he's not. He's here with us talking shit.
Yeah. And without any further ado, let's dive into the plot of Urban Legend.
Nice.
So, the movie opens with a killer decapitating Pendleton University student Michelle Mancini. Is it a little nod?
Wow.
To a certain creator of a certain killer doll we've been referencing a lot throughout this whole episode?
Is it?
That
maybe?
Is so funny.
Perhaps.
We still need to cover one of the movies.
Yeah, we still have to cover Seed of Chucky. Mm-hmm. In the back seat of her car during a rainstorm. There's someone in your back seat. Meanwhile, at the campus coffee shop, student Parker Riley regales friends Natalie, Simon, and Brenda Bates by describing a massacre in the abandoned Stanley Hall dormitory, in which journalism student Paul Gardner discredits as an urban legend.
This is the most Scream conversation of the whole fucking movie.
For sure.
Oh, I got the whole plot.
Oh, absolutely. News of Michelle's murder spreads the following day, but Dean Adams and campus police officer Reese Wilson seems determined to bury the story. Damon Brooks, a jokester and fraternity member, of course, attempts to console the notably disturbed Natalie, who rejects his sexual advances while in his parked car at a bluff. I don't want to wait. Perhaps it was I don't want to wait that kind of turned her off from the whole situation.
That is so funny.
Just to reiterate to the audience here, Damon Brooks is Joshua Jett.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's who he is, and his character in particular definitely has easy access to Rufalin, for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah, he's a fucker in this movie. He's like, they do a Pop Rocks and Soda thing with Robert Englund, and...
Scared the shit out of me as a kid so bad. So bad.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the kind of guy you cover your drinks around when you're in a club.
No. I would literally rather chug my drink than ask this man to hold my drink.
He's hoping for either option. Either option. He's like, chug it or you know, let me take care of it. That's
Yep.
This is not the child we see in Dawson's Creek or the Mighty Ducks.
No.
Wow, he was in the Mighty Ducks.
Jesus. This is a different definition of flying V here. So,
no.
Yep.
Yep. No.
Wow.
God damn it.
That's good. That's good.
Damon goes outside to take a piss, and an assailant in a hooded parka attacks him and hangs him from a tree. Natalie flees for help. But Damon's body and car have disappeared when she returns with Reese. Parker and his girlfriend Sasha Thomas assure Natalie that Damon has pranked her. There's about 27 characters in this movie.
Yeah.
Good luck keeping track of all of them, especially because like Brenda and Sasha, for some reason, I keep getting mixed up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of names.
Just so you know, also, at some point during the middle of this, or actually at the very beginning of this, Tara Reid is having the weirdest sexual conversations on her radio show about, like, can I get pregnant by swallowing sperm? And she's like, listen, dumb shit. Like, that's not how this works. It's just weird. This is one of those things where I'm like, oh, this movie was made for, like, middle schoolers.
Yeah.
For sure.
The swapping out birth control with baby aspirin, I was just like, oh, someone's getting their ass beat.
You're like, damn, that is a crime, ma'am.
Yeah.
That is a crime, and I may have to report this shit. Write down the number.
Yeah, isn't that technically sexual assault? Like, or, like...
Something bad.
It's not good. It's definitely illegal.
Yeah. Okay, and so just Natalie's the main character. We know that for
Natalie's
sure.
Natalie's the main character, and she's getting gaslit into oblivion because she's just like, no, seriously, someone died. And then fucking the rent-a-cop from the campus is just like, no, there's nothing going on here. Have you been drinking? How much have you drank tonight? Go home. She's like...
It's, you know, she is literally getting gaslit, and also, like, dudes are just coming on to her. It's like, she just looks too vulnerable, and people are like, ah, you know what?
Nah.
I don't know what it's... very off-putting.
The whole thing.
Yeah, definitely. But later... Oh, wait, you had Jared Leto, and they're also talking shit. But anyways, later, while Natalie sleeps, the killer strangles her goth roommate, Tosh Guarneri, to death, obviously. She finds Tasha's body in the morning, along with a bloody message crawled on the wall. By the way, do you know who plays Tosh?
Of course, it's Daniel Harris.
Danielle Harris, for
Danielle.
Sure.
Danielle!
Yeah.
Danielle Harris, Miss Thorne Trilogy herself right there.
So, a fun fact that did not make it into the outline. She auditioned for the role of Natalie.
Would have actually been good in that role too, but
I think so.
To me, like, I don't know. I saw this when I was pretty young, so this could have really instilled a lot of stuff that I'm like, oh, that explains that thing now.
That explains a lot. Another thing is she was really excited to be playing a character that smokes because at the time she also smoked cigarettes, and by the end of it, because she had to smoke so much for the movie, because that's how movies work, and doing takes of things. She was so sick of smoking, she quit.
That's good. See? Hey, change your life there. Nice.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
I just keep tripping out on the fact that, like, 11-year-old me consistently watch goth Danielle Harris get choked out.
Sir?
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Look at you, man.
Wow. And I kept watching this movie. Okay, anyways.
10-year-old me did not know that was Danielle Harris. I just didn't make the connection at the time. But I always thought she was a cutie, and I always thought she was hot. And then, when I watched it as like, I didn't see this movie again until, like, college years or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit, that's Danielle Harris. I did not even know that. Yeah, I mean, but 10-year-old me didn't know. I saw this when this movie came out. I didn't
Same here. It's a major rental for sure. Mm-hmm. Big-time rental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a next-door neighbor who was, like, all about... she was a teenager. I was a preteen. She was already like 13 or 14. Then she was like, hey, my mom let me rent Scream. My mom let me rent I Know What You Did Last Summer. And Urban Legend was like that trifecta.
Definitely in the rotation.
Yep. And then so I was like, yeah, let's watch freaking Urban Legend. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll get to our experiences coming up. But yeah.
Yeah. I got carried away with the whole Danielle Harris thing.
I know. Me too.
Go ahead.
It was definitely a fundamental moment there. But distraught, she tells Brenda that she and Michelle, her high school friend that was killed up top in the opening scene of the movie, had received probation for causing a fatal car accident after driving with their headlights turned off and pursuing the first driver who flashed them. And they are notably not in a gang, just white women, and so they got away with it.
I was going to say, the fact that they got probation for basically killing someone, this is negligent homicide, basically by the definition of negligent homicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Fascinating to me, and I was just like, ah, yes, I forgot white women can get away with anything.
Especially in the 90s. They really had the superpowers are in full flex right there.
Oh, yeah.
They're the perfect victim and can get away with anything.
Mm-hmm. This is all before Casey Anthony fucked everything up.
God, no, she's innocent. Casey.
But she threw suspicion on everything. All
she's
right? She just
legally
she threw the coat.
Innocent. That is. Okay, also, just for context of everyone, she did it. She fucking did it. Okay?
She definitely did it, but she can still fuck it up while getting away with it.
Yeah, she absolutely did it. I just mean, in the legal term, she is innocent, heavy on the air quotes. I didn't want anyone to come at me thinking that I actually think Casey Anthony.
I was going to say, I was like, wait, what? Webster.
Technically, not convicted for a crime, but still on the broader spectrum, fuck things up for white, put white women back 20 years.
Oh,
sure.
God. You know.
That's funny.
Because that's you know, the plight.
Yeah, I know. I just could not get it. Oh, Jesus, no, we're going way too far. We're going way too far.
So, I was about to make a fucked up joke, so please continue.
Okay. Paul, Mr. Leto, meanwhile, investigates local urban legends and discovers that the Stanley Hall Massacre had actually occurred. It happened for real. With William Wexler, a professor of American folklore played by Robert Englund, its actual sole survivor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. Oh, and then Robert Englund in this movie, by the way, to this point, is just fucking smooth. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's
every line delivery, I'm like, God damn, that guy, he's just confidence going on right here. So, yeah, for sure. Now, Dean Adams, who's been just a thorn in everyone's side, really no redeeming qualities here. He's been murdered in the campus parking garage. And Reese later finds Wexler's office disorganized and covered in blood immediately after the murder. So suspicious. Meanwhile, Natalie, Brenda, and Sasha attend a fraternity party coinciding with the massacre's 25th anniversary, during which the killer incapacitates Parker in the bathroom and murders him by forcing Pop Rocks and bathroom chemicals down his throat, which is not how the urban legend works, but the guy is a douche, and I don't want to say deserved it, but...
I'm not
kind of fitting.
He
kind of fitting.
He deserved it, but he deserved it.
Oh, they have the guy with the douchiest face playing. So what's his name? Parker? Yeah.
Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum. This is actually one of his first roles, but he has one of the most like recognizable, punchable faces I've ever seen. Because I've seen him in like a bajillion things.
Is he like a TV guy?
He was in Smallville. He played Lex Luthor.
Yes. He is Lex Luthor.
Okay.
And he was in a very, very underrated independent film called Pool Hall Junkies with Christopher Walken. That movie fucking rules if you ever get a chance to watch it.
I've heard about that movie. I never saw it, though. It
came out like in 03, maybe 04.
No, that was a big high school one for sure. Yeah. Wow. I haven't even heard that said in Phil. All right.
Yeah. Way to go. Shit. But yeah, I knew he looked familiar, and this is one of his first roles that kind of helped jumpstart his career. So he can thank Urban Legend for that and being an absolute douchebag, which helped him become Lex fucking Luthor on Smallville.
Kid me hated this motherfucker so much.
He has a face.
I was like, fucking kill him. Every time I'm going to kill his ass, kill his ass. Anyways, Sasha departs to host her tarot read, her late night talk show at the campus radio station, looking like a goddamn vixen the whole way through. So during the broadcast, the killer attacks her and her assistant, the only black person in this entire movie. And
no
her
lie.
He's got a line in the beginning.
Oh,
just like
A line.
And her screams are played live on air, and again, just had to see this while going through puberty. It's fine. The fraternity party goers assume it is a prank, referencing, of course, the massacre. But Natalie fearing Sasha is, of course, in very obvious danger, rushes to the station where she witnesses the killer in her lovely parka murder Sasha with an axe. Again, one of the least intimidating killer costumes ever is a fucking parka.
We got
no mask.
Wow.
Nothing. Just like, you know what? H&M is sponsoring this fucking murders.
Couldn't find a place to put this, but this movie was supposed to take place like in the dead of winter, and the only thing that didn't get removed from that plot was the fucking parka.
Mm-hmm.
That's so dumb.
Isn't that dumb? Like,
they could have had a mask. They could have had a mask. It would have changed.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, spoiler alert for a movie that came out nearly, you know,
25 years ago.
I can't do math. 25 years ago. If she were wearing a mask, you'd be able to see her hair.
Yeah.
Oh, good point.
She's
good
got very point. Identifiable hair.
Yeah. Can't you do the parka and the mask? Right? Just give us
just
a little,
something. Just something.
A hood or some shit. I don't know.
I mean, she was wearing a hood.
Oh, you're right. But like a cloak. I don't fucking know. Yeah.
Something that isn't a parka. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, something that's not going to be on a catalog. Like, that's not, that's not how this works.
Something you can't buy on L.L. Bean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not something that I put on. I'm like, it's too fucking lame. And take it off. Like, anyways. Natalie soon finds Paul and Brenda on campus. Paul, convinced of Wexler's complicity, escorts them away in his car. Yeah, and there we go. Now it's time to conclude this bitch.
All right, to conclude the plot for Urban Legend 1998. Here he goes. They stop at a gas station, and while Paul is inside, Natalie and Brenda find Wexler's mutilated body in the fucking trunk,
What's
guys.
That smell? It's the smell of blood.
The two women flee through the woods back toward campus as Paul pursues them. Meanwhile, they become separated, and Natalie flags down the university's janitor passing by in his truck. He picks her up, but the killer forces their car off the road, pursuing them in a separate vehicle. The car crashes the janitor, or the crash kills the janitor, but...
But the car was driving the janitor, and then somehow they both hit a tree.
The fox jumps over the lazy dog.
A subject and a predicate. But Natalie leaves unscathed and flees on foot. While passing...
Was that a reference to Express Yourself by N.W.A., the subject and the predicate?
Wow. Not really, but I mean...
No? I know what you're talking about. Dr. Dre lyric
But I know that. I know the lyric, yeah.
Sorry.
Express Yourself!
The subject and the predicate. Oh, wow, Phil. Okay.
I mean, it was unintentional, but yeah, sure, yeah. I'm very aware of the lyric.
By the way, the janitor just being, like, creepy and all this stuff, this movie just reinforces, like, people in the 90s did not trust ugly people. They just did not trust ugly people.
Yeah.
Despite their genuine efforts.
Yep. If you weren't attractive, you were suspect.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Definitely.
Well, that actor is like a pretty well known like character actor. He's been in like over 300 movies. Like he is he's been in everything.
Yeah.
Julian Richings.
Urban Legends included.
Yeah, Urban Legends included. He's been in Wrong Turn. He was in Cube. Mm. He was in fucking...
That's probably where I know him from, is from Cubed.
Yeah, he's been... Like, he was in fucking Supernatural for a little bit, if that was your deal. He's been...
I forget we covered Wrong Turn. Wow, yeah, he was in that one, isn't he?
Okay.
Remember when we covered Wrong Turn forever and a half ago?
Oh, I got booted again.
No, you're still here.
I can hear you, buddy. Oh, no.
You just couldn't hear us.
Oh.
Man, this is going to be a bitch to edit. Oh, well.
I got booted again.
There you
again.
Go.
Hi.
Yeah, my bad. You were saying remember what? Wrong Turn?
I said remember doing Wrong Turn and forever and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
That movie's awesome.
That was one of the premiere month movies, baby. That was one of the premiere month ones.
Goddamn.
Wow. That was like 3 years ago. Jesus, what is wrong with... Oi. Time.
That was pre-filled, so I suggest we should cover that again. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you would...
I'm joking.
The only thing it would just
I'll
be...
I'll take any excuse
extra,
for Dushku.
I was going to say, an extra droolage over Eliza Dushku, my beloved.
early 2000s.
Yeah. Future Mrs. Webster.
Look at you.
Like, she'd take your last name, dude. It'd be Alex Dushku at that point.
I don't think so. You. I'm very attached to my last name.
I don't think... Eliza Dushku strikes me as the person that she would not change her last name.
She's married. She didn't.
Oh, see? There you go.
Yeah.
Damn. All right, well. Can we continue?
Yes, please.
Phil Dushku preserves over here.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. While passing Stanley Hall, Natalie hears Brenda's screams from inside. In the building, she finds her friends as corpses, along with an apparently dead Brenda outstretched on a bed. However, Brenda knocks Natalie unconscious moments later. When Natalie awakens, Brenda knocks Natalie unconscious. Oh god, when Natalie awakens, Brenda reveals herself as the motherfucking killer! Enacting revenge for her fiancé, David Evans, not related to Chris Evans. And the fatality in the road accident Natalie and Michelle, of course, caused.
I love how she busts out, like, the country accent. She's like, mm-hmm, and then, by the way, you motherfuckers, like...
Where did that come from? She's just like, I've been faking this the whole time. Like, what?
I think she just spoke with the director and said, hey, how about we just give him a fucking country accent? Anyways.
Yeah, definitely.
Brenda attempts to remove Natalie's kidney, but is thwarted when Reese arrives and holds Brenda at gunpoint. What did I say? I said thwarted.
Thwarted.
Thwarted. Thwarted. Thwarted. Thwarted. Is that how you pronounce that word?
It's thwarted.
I said thwarted.
But good lord.
Thwarted. Anyways, Jesus Christ. When Reese.
Sorry.
But it's thwarted.
A near crust of cane situation. Almost.
It's near. It's close. It's damn close. Anyways. Close,
yeah.
But it's thwarted. Here. Is that good? Yes. Is that good for you? When Reese arrives and holds Brenda at gunpoint, Brenda manages to stab Reese with a switchblade, and when Paul arrives, Natalie gains control of the gun and shoots Brenda, who falls out of a window before leaving with him to get help for Reese. Mm-hmm.
No, I was like almost playing by Scream rules here because it just falls into the water.
Yeah.
All right. So as they drive away, the two discuss how this will later be an urban legend and all the facts will be disconstrued. Paul asks, well, if this is an urban legend, where is the twist?
God damn it.
Brenda then appears in the back seat and attacks them with a fucking axe. Paul crashes the car on a bridge, causing Brenda to go through the windshield and into the river below.
Splash, bitch.
Splash, bitch. The sequel to Splash for Daryl Hannah is just mean to
everyone. Wow. Tom Hanks makes a cameo.
Oh, yeah. Tom's like, I fuck that mermaid.
Anyways, later, a group of students at a different university have recounted the events of Brenda's killing spree, during which they say that her body was never discovered. Most of them believe the tale, except for one young woman revealed to be Brenda, who claims that the story was incorrectly told and begins explaining, quote, how the story really goes. And, of course, we roll credits.
Damn.
Finito!
Guys, we did it. Also, you said most of them believe the tale instead of disbelieve the tale, but that's all right.
Most of them disbelieve the tale. Oh, except for one.
Yeah, they were
Brenda.
They were all skeptics, but then she was like,
let me tell you a different
hour and a half story. You guys don't have to be in class or anything, right?
Yeah, this one has no parka and a mask. The better version of the story.
It's the better version. All right, guys, we made it. Finally, I'm so curious.
Woo!
I'm so curious. I'm surprised we held our tongues this whole time. Thoughts on Urban Legend 1998. Any of you.
Phil first. You go first.
Okay. Yeah, all right. As I mentioned earlier, there is like a nostalgia factor to it. However, when I was a kid, I thought this movie was probably like my least favorite of that trifecta that I mentioned earlier. It's not just a trifecta. Yeah. It's just like 90s like horror films that came out from I Know What You Did Last Summer to The Faculty to Scream to this to Urban Legend.
Meta.
Urban Legend, yeah. Urban Legend is probably my least favorite one out of the movies that I just mentioned. But this movie is a lot of fun. Absolutely. It's clever. And the killer kind of sucked. But from the aesthetics to... I like the motive. The motive was cool. But this movie itself was... It's actually... I like the meta-ness. This is during the time where I was like, okay, this is one of those movies. And I totally respect it, and I like it. It's fun revisiting this movie. It's always fun revisiting this movie. It's not a horror movie that I revisit often, especially during October or, like, you know, spooky season. I haven't watched this movie in probably, like, 6 or 7 years until recently. But, yeah, it's fun. It's a fun-ass movie, honestly. I think clever and fun are the two words that you'll probably hear me say about this.
Awesome. Anthony?
Oh, I love this movie. I'm actually with Phil, the nostalgia factor. So to explain, I'm with the same shit. Like, it was part of the 90s. Like, I know she did Last Summer. You watch Scream, you watch Scream 2. Mm-hmm. And you watch Urban Legend and Bride of Chucky. Like, they were all part of the same kind of rotation. Yeah, this one has... So I haven't literally seen this movie in maybe, like, 20 years.
Nice.
Like, it's actually been a long, long, long time since I've seen this movie. But I feel like I watched it so much when I was younger. Like, I knew everything. I just knew. Like, every sentence, I was like, oh, it's that sentence, or, like, that sound bite. Yeah, it's comfort food. I don't know. I wouldn't say a McDouble of, like, horror movies. Like, it really is, like, pretty easy. Like, it's a very easy, cheap-ass, kind of, like, whatever version of the kind of fix that you want for 90s horror. It's a really good summation of it. It's kind of dumb. It's dumb in a lot of points. But also, like, fun. Like, it's really dumb fun that's... It like Phil said, it's actually very clever in moments. But overall, like, it really is just a very... baby cheeseburger of a horror movie that I enjoy. I really actually just enjoy when I get to watch it. And, you know, when you're a kid, you like cheeseburgers a lot more than when you're an adult and you can handle them a little bit more. This is the same thing. If I had to watch this a bunch when I was an adult, I'd probably get tired of it. But you know what? Every once in a while, give it to me. This is a great time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a really good time. I'd love to watch it in a group so we can all just dump on particular scenes, identify cameos.
Absolutely.
I don't know what it is. Like, it's just, there's not a lot of polish here. The great soundtrack, cinematography is okay, acting is 90s as hell.
Yeah.
Really straight up, you can tell these are TV actors for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But just dumb fun. Give it to me. Like, honestly, not bad. It's cheese. And it's an easy watch. It's very fast. So, you know, despite being 10 minutes longer than most movies we cover here aren't anyway. So, I'm with it. And again, kid me, Daniel Harris just did it for me. God damn. And I forgot about it literally until now. And
so silly in this movie, too. That's so funny to me.
Just that her goth outfit, I was like, something about that back in the day, I was like, oh, my God. I saw somebody wearing that, ooh, that's my lady.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, Webster, what'd you think?
Yeah, now that we're done, like, gazing into your psyche, this movie is dumb and I fucking love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's exactly like what you were saying. You took the words right out of my mouth, Anthony, when you just said, is it dumb? Yes. Is it also good? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is very silly at parts, but, like, I was expecting to come in swinging into this, like, being like, this movie sucked for this reason and that reason, but it's a dumb movie. Like, I'm not gonna argue that this is, like, a hidden gem of late 90s horror by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fun as hell. Like, and it's good, like, soothing comfort junk food. if you're horror fans. Especially if you like urban legends. I think this is a really, really cool concept that I can see why people were disappointed and wanting it to be played up a little bit more seriously as opposed to, like, the meta, almost borderline comedy. Because at one point there's a...
Borderline comedy, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a line where it's like, what are they going to do? Shove a gerbil up a celebrity's ass? Or whatever. Like, and it's just, it's very... Like, there's a lot of silly lines in this movie, and there's a lot of silly moments. But like you said, Phil, there's also a lot of really smart and witty moments. Even though, yeah, it balances, it's doesn't balance out well. Like, it's not a very well-balanced movie. But it's fun. And it really agree, Urban Legends Irk would be incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's
definitely one of those movies.
Definitely. No, there are down times where you can, like, we'll stop and pick up drinks and talk.
Yeah.
And then when the music starts, we're like, oh, okay, good. It's time to pay attention, talk shit. Like, that's the flow of the movie.
And then you could all just, like, you know, we could all just be, like, talking shit, like, oh, aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light? And, like, just talk about urban legends, because I don't know. I still feel like that is such, like, folklore and stories like that are just like a communal thing that people love talking about. I mean, I could tell you the first time I heard the dog like licking hand story, urban legend, scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. Unless no one knows what I'm talking about, in which case I'm about to blow your fucking mind.
I
don't remember the dog one.
I don't know that.
Okay,
one,
it's a girl. So she's babysitting. She's home alone. Her dog normally will lay under her bed and like lick her hand when and like she'll put her hand under the bed.
Oh yeah.
And it turns out later that like there was a person and the person was licking her hand.
Yep, creepy. That's a common one I remember back in the day. Yeah.
I don't think I remember that one.
The full story. It was deeply upsetting.
Oh yeah.
And it was, and I remember being like a little kid and like thinking like, oh my god, this actually happened, because I was a kid and I didn't have critical thinking skills. But anyway, that's for later. So we kind of talked about this a little bit already, but this movie came out riding the wave of meta horror of the late 90s, Scream most notably. How did the late 90s horror scene shape up because of Scream? What is its ripple effect in this in relation to urban legend, do you think?
Well, there was no doubt like a big level of impact that Scream left, for sure. There's no denying it. It's all right there, clear as crystal. I think it shaped up to be very, I don't know, it gave a lot of filmmakers and overall storytellers new ideas to explore, new concepts to explore, and I think that's what they did with the urban legend. Like, I think they were like, hey, they did something really cool with Scream. Is there any way we can implement that, but like with a fantasy story, such as like, hey, these guys are messing around with urban legends. Can we incorporate meta into a fantasy story but still have it be fun as shit?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, also I think that we talk a lot about how Scream revitalized the horror genre in the 90s, but then, you know, we don't really talk about like how, and I think that's exactly it, right? Where it's you know, like, you have to take those elements from Scream and then apply it to something else. So people are obviously going to think, like, this is just a Scream ripoff. But no, it's the inspiration kind of making its way through horror movies, which I think is exactly what Scream did.
You know, 10-year-old me, when this movie came out, it was very easy for me to say that this was a Scream ripoff. But that was before I even knew how movies were made, before I even knew what the fuck a camera does and stuff like that. You know, I just thought movies were just a natural thing that comes out of the ground, you know? And
yeah, anybody can make a movie.
Yeah, exactly. And so once I started getting into movies and started studying history of film and started studying horror, I was just like, oh, dude, this is where influences come from. This is what it means to be influenced by something else. I think Tarantino said it, like, real filmmakers never are good filmmakers borrow stuff, great filmmakers steal stuff. And I was like, there is some truth to what he said there. And I was like, okay. And yeah.
I can see that because, like, it taking something and then adding on to it, I think, is pretty much just has been what's been going on since the beginning of time. Since the beginning of movies.
Yeah.
Well, that, and it, like, pushes the meta. So, like, one thing that I think that Scream did very well that I think a lot of horror movies tried to do, and then that, because it did it so successfully, we get movies like Urban Legend and other movies that follow that are playing by a different rule book, is it educated the audience. It did not treat them dumb. It's like, oh, you know this. And if even if we watched this shit when we were kids, but we had already seen horror movies up until that point, so despite not, like, immediately identifying the rules, Scream spelled out the rules, and now that you don't have to do that anymore, they were able to tell a story that kind of give you a wink and kind of treated you respectfully, which I think even a movie like this is like, you know what a fucking urban legend is, so we're going to play with it and we're going to have fun with it, and because you already understand the direction we're going here, we get to kind of have fun. It gets to be a more elevated experience than what you're used to. So, yeah. I mean, the 90s stuff, like meta horror, it really, it's so fundamental because it's like, it finally brought everybody in on what I think filmmakers knew for the longest point. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things that, again, like, everything's meta now, right? Like, it was just another stepping stone towards the broad consensus of, like, we know how this works, it's all bullshit, let's have fun.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that just hit the nail on the head, so I'm not going to recycle that answer again.
We're the same brain sometime, Webster.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. You just got to switch who goes first because we will have a similar answer.
Right, no. Sometimes that just happens to be the case. But I am curious on your guys' thoughts about why this movie, like, in some cases, it looks like it did very, very well, but then in other cases, it looks like it did very, very bad. And I'm curious about your interpretation of those two, like, facts and how they seem to kind of coincide with each other. Because it has a 24%, but it made $74 million. It has a average 2.4 rating on Letterboxd, but most of the reviews that I saw, like the highly rated ones, were pretty high, or pretty, like, they were praising the movie. They weren't 5-star reviews by any stretch of the imagination, but they were, like, most of them were praising the movie because it's just a fun movie.
Webster, when you were doing research for this, did you come across anything about the trailer? Like, the level of impact that the trailer left on people? Or maybe the marketing?
No, I didn't see anything about, like, the marketing. The trailer looked like a very typical late 90s, like, trailer where it's just like, these kids are in trouble.
That's what scared the shit out of me was the trailer. I distinctly remember watching this as a kid, and I was like, oh, that looks fucking scary. Mom, can we go see that? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, or dad or somebody, older uncle, somebody. Can somebody please take me this? Because I'm too
take
young.
Take me, please.
Yes. Yeah. The trailer scared the shit out of me, and it was, I don't know, man, the fact that it was just set on urban legends, and, you know, there's plenty of them out there, and, I don't know. I think the trailer made a big level of impact because I remember the trailer very much. By the way, I was doing, like, this VHS videos that I've been doing recently. Mm-hmm. One of them, I forgot what movie it was. Was this Fifth Element? I can't remember. I had the trailer for Urban Legend. I just sat and watched it. And I was like, that's still kind of creepy. I was like, that's still kind of a creepy trailer.
I have the Urban Legend VHS right here.
You do?
It's in my apartment.
It's in my apartment, but I don't have a VHS player, so I couldn't watch it on the VHS. That would have been such a great way to experience it.
You have to let Phil do the video thing so we can use it for promo.
Exactly.
I'm going to send it.
Exactly.
I'm going to send it right.
Bring it to Reeks Fest.
You know what? I'll bring it to Reeks. I'll bring it to Reeks.
Bring it to Reeks Fest, yes. And I'll make a video. Give me a couple days, and I'll do a fucking reel out of it.
Fuck yes.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, let's do it. For me, my I would say the disparity is very simple, at least in my estimation. 98, critics were done with Scream ripoffs after a couple years because they see movies all the fucking time. Audiences were not. Audiences were still rearing for, like, nah, this is still my fix. I still want more of this. I think that's just the big disparity. Critics were already like, they were still not even 100% on board with Scream 2. Mm-hmm. Like, they were sick by that point. But people generally were like, no, we're in the middle of the fucking revival. Give us more. That's why we have such a big box office versus critics. And generally people who, I think, look for more elevated movies being like, but it's, like, not that good. Everyone else is like, fuck off, it's fine. Like, that's the disparity that I think we have with how this movie is perceived. Because, by all means, it's a huge success.
Yeah.
But it is, at the end of the day, legacy-wise, fairly underrated, or at least underappreciated, just not... You know, there's definitely a disparity there. But I think, at the time, a lot of people who grew up with it just wanted more of what was giving us our fix back in the day, and this movie really, it's why it's part of the trifecta. It really delivered on that.
90s, the era of, you know what, this movie's just fine. Like, I'm cool with just fine for my horror movies for the most part. Like, I really am. Like, I'm not... Mm-hmm. I enjoy it just fine.
All these pre-9/11 movies are just like, oh, that was a good time. And then afterwards, like, we have to be very serious now.
And that being said, Event Horizon is a late 90s movie, so...
Oh, wow.
Which is also, mm-hmm. like, technically just fine. Like, it's silly, mm-hmm. but it's also incredibly graphic.
Another movie that came out this year, 98, right?
Yeah.
One that everybody was expecting to be not just okay, but they wanted it to be great was H2O, Halloween. Like, I think everybody was like, oh, this is 20 years later. It's got to be fucking great, you know? And it turned out to be not the best, you know, but it was pretty cool. We covered H2O, but I think Urban Legend and a whole bunch of other horror flicks in around that time, maybe between 97 and 99, a lot of them were just trying to have a good spooky time in the theater, you know, and in home video. Mm-hmm.
And then in 1999, we get the Blair Witch Project, and everything changed.
That changed a lot of shit right there.
That was just like, oh, fuck, are we ready to be scared again? Mm-hmm. Are we ready to be scared again? Yep. Holy shit.
As opposed to just feeling comforted by our horror films. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think, because the audience rating is like 37%. It's not much higher for Urban Legend.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I just think some people, it's not for everyone, I guess, but it is just like, it's a perfectly fine horror movie. Like, it's not winning any awards, but that's also just fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of the definition of a cult classic, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, people like it, they're like, fuck, just give it to me. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is like, dude, you really? Really?
Yeah, are you sure? All right, moving right along. I'm going to switch around the questions real quick, but we're going to, you know, breeze right through them. What horror icons are you stacking a remake of this film with?
Ooh. Damn. So, like, horror icons get to play the victims and killers?
The same way that, like, we got Brad Dourif and Robert Englund in this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just other, and like, you know, Jared Leto.
Okay.
No, which horror icons? We're bringing back Daniel Harris for sure.
Okay, all right. Sure.
I would like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator to be the janitor.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's see.
Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be a professor for sure.
Sure.
What if we made Toni Collette the killer?
Oh.
You bitch. That's not a bad idea at all.
I would want Bill Skarsgård to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Bill Skarsgård, yeah.
But we gotta do to him what they did in Barbarian.
No.
Okay.
No.
But we gotta do to him, because everybody expects Bill Skarsgård to be the... Wait, spoilers for Barbarian here. Hang on. Fuente, have you seen Barbarian or not?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, love that movie.
Okay, alright, because I liked how they made him believe like he was already the creepy guy, but he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Skarsgård.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Yeah.
Can we kill Jenna Ortega in the opening scene?
Yes. We absolutely can.
Let me just take her out. I was going to say, can we just not have her?
No, kill her right up top. I don't mind her, to be honest. I think she's great, but like, also just take her out like immediately. Just be like, hey, everybody, you like her, and then
I'm feeling the Ortega fatigue already, and it's very young in her career. It's too early for her.
Florence Pugh, she would be good. I mean, she's my answer for everything right now, though. If I was like, whoa, who would you cast it? Blah, 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 blah. The answer for me right now is Florence Pugh.
with Anya Taylor-Joy as the killer at the end of the day in the parka. In the parka.
Also, because she does crazy real well. So, like, imagine that monologue at the end with done by Anya Taylor Joy. Oh, fucking incredible!
With her fake ass country accent, dude, give it to me. Her fake Texas Anya Taylor Joy accent.
Yeah,
with her
crazy.
Like, I loved him
with her crazy eyes. Hell yeah! She also like kind of has crazy eyes. Although hers are more unsettling than like, I don't know. Than Rebecca Gayheart's. I don't know. But good decisions, guys. I enjoy what this theoretical movie would be stocked with. Now, before we rate this movie, I need to know for my own personal gratification here, what is your favorite urban legend?
Oh.
If you want some ideas, I have a list of the urban legends referenced in the movie underneath the questions.
I was going to be easy and basic and just say the Pepsi with the poppers.
It doesn't have to be from the movie also. It just
that one always creeped me out though. Really? In real life. Yeah. I was like, "Oh fuck. Give me some more though."
I always knew that one was like ridiculous. Okay.
Give me some more. Give me some more.
Oh, some more of the urban legends?
Yeah.
So, my favorite. Killer in the Backseat, yeah. But I would say the hanging from the tree with the car below one always freaked me out as a kid. Only because I felt like everybody intrinsically understood, like, 1950s Americana growing up. Like, that was just kind of like, you know, the Stephen King movies, whatever it is. So, to kind of see a corruption of that was always kind of scary. Like, I don't know why the creaking and all that, like that scratching.
That's
how there's something about the unsettlingness.
The hook.
The hook too. Yes. The hook was another one also.
That's the one that was always unsettling for me because it was it's the same vibe.
Yeah,
I didn't know
they're like Americana slasher, right?
Yeah, there, exactly. So let's see. We got Bloody Mary. We have the University cover up campus murder. We got hanging from a tree. We have the lights off one with the headlights.
Yeah.
The ankle slasher where someone hides under your car and slashes at your fucking ankles when you walk by. I remember that one. It still makes me nervous. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
As a single man, somebody replacing somebody you're hooking up with birth control pills. Nuh-uh. Don't do that.
the kidney heist. This one's a classic. The kidney heist.
I remember that one.
Having your stomach pumped after blowing someone. that one's silly. Microwaving your dog. Has anyone heard this one?
I don't think I've ever heard that one.
It's an urban legend about this woman who like was trying to dry off her dog, and so she microwaved the dog, and the dog exploded.
I always hated the scene in this movie because it looked fucking gross.
Of course it's gross. It's nasty. But anyway, so those are some of the urban legends that they talk about in the movie. My personal favorite always will be a classic Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bloody Mary was the thing for sure.
I remember, like... I remember playing Bloody Mary and like staring, and eventually you start seeing yourself, but you think it's someone else, and you start freaking out, and it's just such a good party game. It's such a good, I don't know. I have very fond memories revolving around Bloody Mary or playing Bloody Mary. Mm-hmm. So
that one was always a creepy one too. Like in elementary school, I like believed it. I was like, oh shit, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, no, I believed in it, but I also at the same time I was like, I wanted to see it, like to be sure. And
I was not.
You're like, I don't fuck around with demons.
Nah, I'm good.
Me, like the baby goth I was just like, let me see them.
Yeah. I think I definitely did it, and then afterwards I was like, I felt bad. I'm like, fuck, did I, like, bring some bad shit on us? Did I take this too far? But then, you know, you just forget, you play with shit, and you're like, oh, okay, I forgot about
just
that.
Just like you playing Resident Evil 4.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, again, it just keeps
he got to
hours,
a creepy part.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm actually paused right there. I'm going to get back to it right when we're done with this episode.
Yeah, and we actually are done with this episode. Go ahead, everyone.
Well,
and
rate this movie.
Oh, yeah, sorry, no.
You good? Did you hear that too? Yeah.
I heard that. Yeah, I did.
What the
fuck? I was like, oh shit, we're done.
I was like, is Wetzer getting strangled or something?
did Bloody Mary find her?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I just had to remember, and then it came back.
All right, guys, rate this movie out of 5 horror stereotypes.
2.85.
All right.
Yeah.
3.25.
3.25. All right. I'm gonna
give it high.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, go ahead.
Go for it.
I'm
just saying, like, it really is of its time. And, but if you want something from its time and you need the 90s fix, it's a pretty goddamn good version of that. So yeah. I'll take it. Okay. But it's flawed as fuck. It's a flawed, terrible, not great in a lot of
anything
ways.
Anything above,
you know, but fun.
Anything above a 3.5 is a lie.
Yes. Yeah.
Anything above 3.5 is just, absolute bullshit. I am going to give it a 3.
Nice.
I'm going to split the difference between you two.
All right.
It's a fun movie. I think it is definitely, it's very silly. And I think if you were not feeling, if you're a little bit more serious like me and you weren't in the right mood for it, you would tear this movie to shreds and not have a good time. Thankfully, I was in a good mood yesterday.
That's funny.
All right. I think that's it for Urban Legend from 1998. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything you want to say before I get into the ending spiel, guys?
Listen. You know, if they want to bring back Dawson's Creek, you know, as like a requel or a reboot or what's it called? A spin-off.
We just did a whole episode.
Yeah, exactly. I think society would totally welcome it. And, I don't know. It might make me want to watch Dawson's Creek just so I can, you know, tune into this reboot or spinoff.
Yeah.
So.
You hear that, executives?
Mm-hmm.
The people have demands.
Yes.
All right, guys.
Phil's just trying to get people, like, male highlights back in hair. He's just trying to, like, bring it back.
I know.
Bring it all back.
Before I cut my hair, I was really debating and getting some highlights, but I was like, nah, let's just chop it off.
It's like, only Joshua Jackson can bring this back in 100%.
Yeah.
I understand. Trying to give more career opportunities. Way to go, Phil. Good call.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and call it here. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please make sure you are subscribed wherever you are currently listening to make sure you get the latest episode, and also it helps support the podcast. If you are listening on iTunes or on Spotify, make sure you give us a 5-star rating or review. That also is a free and quick way to help other people find the podcast and support us. And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE, People's Podcast. And then if you want to find Anthony, he is on Instagram and Twitter at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
It's me.
And also, we're part of a network now, guys. You can follow the Horrible People's Network, spelled just like the way I just spelled it previously, to see all the fun offerings that we have here at the network. We're very, very proud of it. We have 4 shows, and I'm sure there will be something there that will tickle your fancy. I think that's it. So, everyone, we'll catch you next week. Oh, my God, next week. What are we talking about next week? Someone?
Fuck.
someone.
We're bringing back a good old tradition we do every April.
And
it's my least favorite movie in the franchise, but we're going to do it anyways.
Oh, yeah. We have a guest next week.
Yeah, Phil, you've been on this one. You know what's up. You know what's up.
I'm fairly aroused here.
What?
Yeah.
Excited.
I don't think you're going to be for this movie because you notoriously hate it as much as I do.
Wait.
All right.
But, yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And I don't want to wait for the last two hours.